Listener advisory. This show contains adult themes and language. This show is a rerun of a show from back in 2008. It's called Puberty Rights. Welcome to New World Notes. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Today's episode is titled Puberty Rights. I resisted the urge to name it Puberty Rights and Wrongs, and you can show your gratitude when Pledge Week rolls around. We'll explore what good, life-affirming, culture-affirming, socially cohesive puberty rights might look like, and don't look like, why America desperately needs them, and why America probably won't be getting them anytime soon. Listeners are advised that this installment features
adult themes
and deals with topics including puberty, homosexuality, fascist scoutmasters, menstruation, contraception, and the probability that your daughter is going to discover boys, marry, and lose her virginity. And, wait for it, not necessarily in that order. Okay. Well, why don't we start with the Boy Scouts?
Be prepared. That's the Boy Scouts marching song. Be prepared. As through life you march along, be prepared to hold your liquor pretty well. Don't write naughty words on walls if you can't spell. Be prepared to hide that pack of cigarettes. Don't make book if you cannot cover bets. Keep those reefers hidden where you're sure that they will not be found. And be careful not to smoke them when the scoutmaster's around, for he only will insist that they be shared. Be prepared. Be prepared. That's the Boy Scout's solemn creed. Be prepared. And be clean in word and deed. Don't solicit for your sister. That's not nice. Unless you get a good percentage of her price. Be prepared. And be careful not to do your good deeds when there's no one watching you. If you're looking for adventure of a new and different kind, and you come across a Girl Scout who is similarly inclined, don't be nervous, don't be flustered, don't be scared. Be prepared.
Remember when there were Cub Scouts? I was a great Cub Scout back in the McCarthy era. We didn't call it the McCarthy era back then, of course, and neither did President Eisenhower, a.k.a. Ike. Probably because the president had a speech impediment. He always pronounced it nuclear. For real, you could look it up. What a moron. Credit where due. The first of the presidents to say nuclear, Ike, led us out of one unwinnable war his predecessor had entered. And he said no to the Secretary of State and the Pentagon when they were clamoring to dive headfirst into another. That's the wars in Korea and Vietnam, respectively. And he said no when they wanted him to make a preemptive nuclear strike against the Soviet Union. Boy, those were the old days. Imagine a president saying no to needless destruction and murder instead of, "Bring 'em on!" Maybe this is what Nancy Reagan was trying to tell us. If a so-called friend offers you drugs or the opportunity to start World War III, just say no. But to return to madness. I was an award-winning Cub Scout, but I never got anywhere afterwards in Boy Scouts. I think I rose to the exalted rank of Tenderfoot before I quit in disgust. Degenerates are us. That was Troop 250. And that was just the adult leadership. The kids were worse. To the best of my memory, my scoutmaster was the only person who ever called me a fairy to my face. Come on, I was 10 years old. You want to call me a fairy now? Go ahead. At least now I know what the word means. Go ahead, call me a fairy.
My name is Bell. Tinker Bell.
I guess I've wandered off the subject a little. Oh yeah, my elder son, now a terrific young man in his mid-20s, was raised somewhat more by other people than by me from the time when he was 4. Unlike his biological father, he rose through the ranks of Boy Scouts all the way to the highest possible level, Eagle Scout. Later, I asked him about the requirements for reaching Eagle. Well, if I revealed everything he told me, he'd have to kill me, and maybe you too. Most of it was just the usual fraternity initiation hijinks. Drinking the blood of children of such and such an ethnic group, crucifying a homosexual upside down, spreading a big lie about Hillary Clinton, and so on. Then he mentioned one requirement of the Eagle that chilled the cockles of my heart. You and your father, or father surrogate, had to have, as he put it, the talk. Oh my God, the talk! Could anything sound or be more dreadful? Not a peep on the whole subject of sexuality until he's 17 and on the verge of becoming an Eagle Scout. Then, for the first time in 17 years, apropos de rien, you sit him down and explain the birds and the bees, in a horribly uncomfortable situation that neither of you wants to be in, not to mention at least 6 years too late. Yep, sounds like the Boy Scouts of America, all right. Probably a last, desperate, doomed attempt to make sure they don't award the Eagle to anyone who's a fairy, like apparently this kid's biological father. Of course, there's a workaround. Just for fun, why not give the kid the Provincetown / San Francisco edition of The Talk? Anyway, as I was saying, rest in peace, noble Scoutmaster. You're probably gone, but your spirit lives on. Like herpes. I see I'm almost on the verge of digressing. Point one is, the American institution known as The Talk is an insult to sex and sexuality. Sex is not supposed to be torture. Unless, of course, that's what the consenting couple really likes. Different strokes, so to speak. Point two, what civilized cultures have, and America conspicuously lacks, is a good, loving, life-affirming, community-affirming, sex-positive coming-of-age ceremony. Or puberty rite, if you want to reduce the number of syllables. Actually, we need two of them. One should be at the onset of puberty. This one might perhaps pertain more to girls than to boys. The second coming-of-age ceremony should mark first sexual intercourse. Our culture's made a few weak stabs at the first ritual. Many Christian churches have a so-called confirmation ceremony. This may indeed be, in part, a coming-of-age ceremony, but it's a pretty poor excuse for a puberty rite. The white dresses on the girl initiates are a tip-off. That's what you get when your culture is beset by a religion that pretends that celibacy is holier than a romp in the hay with a new acquaintance, or even your spouse. Ask yourself, what kind of city would they name after St. Paul? Cold. The Jewish bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah ceremonies may be a little more community-oriented than Christian confirmation, but I'm seeing the same ballpark here. And what about the millions of kids who are not brought up religious? Okay, here's a great recording. It's from an educational movie produced in 1958 in glorious black and white by the makers of Tampax. The original is 15 minutes long. I've edited it down to 6 minutes. It shows an idealized version of America's puberty rites for girls. It's a totally private rite, marked only by the girl, a girlfriend or two, the school nurse, who is attractive, unmarried, and totally asexual, and the wise, compassionate, and totally asexual mother. In America, apparently, puberty has nothing to do with sex, nothing to do with the creating of new life. It has nothing to do with public affirmation and celebration of the roles of women in the society. No siree, Roberta. It's all about menstruation, all four syllables in the movie. Something is missing here. Everything that's important is missing here. Well, welcome to America. After this, we'll take a look at, oh, say, the Ashanti people of Ghana, whose puberty rights are wiser than ours. But to return to America. In the film, the girl's father is clueless, but at least the mother is a model of sensitivity, wisdom, and good parenting. Compares favorably to some of the mothers I've heard stories about. These Americans tended to celebrate their daughter's first period by scowling, tossing a Kotex pad at the girl, and advising her to put it on, don't even think of trying to flush it, don't say a word about this to your brothers, keep away from the good furniture, and for God's sakes, can't you do something with your hair? One other difference between the movie and the real America. Real American puberty rites have an additional ritual that the movie doesn't show. That is, the boys are kicked out of the classroom, and the girls are forced to sit through a movie much like this one. Two suggestions before we're forced to do the same. Don't miss the background music, and don't miss the tons of bad medical advice.
You know, I've known Molly and her family ever since she first came to school. And I think you might like to know her, too. Molly lives at home with her father, her mother, and her older sister, Jeannie.
Jeannie, when do you think I'll start having periods, too?
Oh, I don't know. Pretty soon, I suppose. I was 13 when I started.
Well, Peggy's already started hers, and I'm 6 months older than she is.
Well, so what? Some start earlier and some later. We're all different. And from the way you've been acting lately, it shouldn't be long now.
One day, not long after that, Molly came home from school.
Hi, what kind of a day did you have today?
Mom, guess what?
I don't know. What?
Mom, I started my first period.
Well, what do you know? Come on, sit down. Tell me about it. When did it start?
Well, it was this afternoon when I was changing into my gym clothes, and I noticed a bit of blood on my panties, and golly, at first I thought, well, I didn't know what to think. And then I remembered when we talked about menstruation and stuff, and, well, then I went to see Miss Jensen.
Oh, my goodness. How do you feel?
Kind of funny-like. I mean, well, I was hoping it would start soon, but it seems like I've forgotten everything you've told me.
All right, I tell you what we'll do. Tonight will be mother and daughter conference night. And if you'll give me a hand with supper, we'll get started that much earlier.
Okay, I'll wash up and be right down.
Golly.
I'll get it. That's probably Peggy. Hello? Oh, hi, Peggy. Sure, just a minute, I'll ask. Mom, can I go swimming with Peggy tomorrow after school?
I don't think I would, Molly.
But I'd be home by 5:30.
No, it's not a good idea the first 2 or 3 days of your period. You might get chilled and catch cold.
Oh, that's right. Peggy, of course I can't go swimming. You know I've got the curse. That's right. It isn't a good idea the first couple of days. Okay, I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
What are you two up to?
Oh, how were the fights, Jim?
No, not bad. Something wrong with our aerial, though. We ought to be getting a better picture than that. What was all the talk about in here? Is this a private conference?
No, I don't think so. Do you, Molly?
No, I guess not. You tell him, Mom.
Well, Jim, Molly's growing up. She's having her first menstrual period.
What? Already? Oh, but Alice, I thought... Well, I mean, after all, she's only...
Oh, Daddy, don't be so silly. I'm not a baby anymore.
I know, dear, but... No. No, honey, I guess you are.
Miss Jensen, is it true that people can tell when you're menstruating?
No, it isn't. But you should be more careful than ever about personal cleanliness and dainties. Change your underwear more often, and be sure and use a deodorant. And pay more attention to your hair and your nails, and plan to wear your prettiest dress. In other words, be your most attractive self. Yes, Anne?
Miss Jensen, what about dancing? Can you when you're menstruating?
Yes, you can, with moderation. In fact, you can do most of the things you usually do. You can bathe or shower as long as you use warm water. And you can wash your hair if you're sure to dry it quickly. And you can swim if you wait until after 2 or 3 days after the beginning of your period. And you can go to dances and picnics. But it's not a very good idea to skate or ride horseback or play fast games like volleyball and basketball or do strenuous dancing like square dancing or anything that bounces you around a lot. In general, mild exercises are best. Ones that strengthen the abdominal muscles are particularly good. It's sensible to avoid strenuous exercise when you're menstruating. Soon, Molly will be a young woman like her genie, having dates, going to dances in lovely romantic dresses, and making new and important friends. There are so many wonderful things to look forward to. Growing up, it's an exciting time.
Never.
the man of a thousand voices, Roy Zimmerman. Speaking of puberty rites, that's not how they do it in Ghana. This is from the official Nation of Ghana website. Please forgive my pronunciation. As Dr. Johnson said of Shakespeare, I have little Latin, less Greek, and hardly any Ashanti Tui to speak of. After the naming ceremony, the next important ritual is the puberty rites. Among the well-preserved puberty rites are those of the Ashanti ethnic group. These ceremonies mark the entry of young women into adulthood. In Ghana, only a few ethnic groups have initiation rites for men. These are done in secret and not given as much prominence as that for young women. In the Akan culture, Akan is a broader category that includes the Ashanti ethnic group and a few others. In Akan cultures, women represent the beauty, purity, and dignity of the society and are guarded against corruption by our traditional laws and regulations. The most lasting impressions about life and the character of children are built during their early and formative years, which they spend mostly with their mothers. So the Akans believe that they need properly trained mothers with good morals to bring up good children. Under the supervision of the queen mother of the town or village, young women who have had their first menstruation are secluded from the community for a period between 2 and 3 weeks. Now they are taught the secrets of womanhood. During this period of seclusion, the girls are given lessons in sex education and birth control. They are also taught how to relate to men properly so that they can maintain a good marriage and their dignity in society. After the period of seclusion, a ceremony is held which is attended by the chief and almost everybody in the community. The newly initiated women are dressed scantily with the very beautiful African beads and cosmetics, showing off their vital statistics. Young men of marriageable age troop there to feast their eyes on the young women and to select their prospective wives. Amidst drumming and dancing, the rituals are carried out with the spirit of Oinankupang Kwame, Asasiya'a, and the departed ancestors invoked to bless the participants and ensure their protection, blessing, and fertility during their period of motherhood. According to traditional law, no woman is allowed to get married without having gone through the puberty rites, and every young woman must remain a virgin prior to this. These laws ensure that the young women grow up disciplined enough to control their sexuality and to prevent them from premature motherhood and unwanted babies. So important are these laws that any woman who gets pregnant or breaks her virginity before the rites are performed is sometimes ostracized, together with the man responsible for it. A few things strike me here. The fertility rite is social and communal, not a private matter between a girl, her mother, and the school nurse. Believe it or not, puberty is related to sex, and sex is related to the community, and sex is related to spirituality, and to the gods, and to our ancestors, and to the girls' adoption of new roles in society. The Ashanti don't get the talk for 5 minutes by an embarrassed parent and a kotex tossed at them. They get a 3-week sacred retreat conducted by the queen mother of the village, where they are taught not just to avoid roller skating or cold showers during their period, but how to behave as a woman, how to act as a wife, and how to practice birth control. Menstruation is not just a secret annoyance that prevents you from playing volleyball, and at best promises that 5 years down the road, you'll be able to wear a prom dress and make new and important friends, unlike the losers you're friends with now. It's a public sign, honored by the community, blessed by the gods and departed ancestors. A public sign that the girl has crossed the threshold into womanhood. The multiple ceremonies marking this transition are in turn sacred, practical, and erotic. It's in part a debutante ball, but much more. The Ghana webpage has a photo of two lovely young women, each naked except for a rattan sort of top hat, beads, and an elaborate loincloth, with trains that nearly reach the ground front and rear, but leave the sides exposed. They have the breasts of young women, and they're wearing some light gray-colored cosmetic powder on their nipples that highlights them. Remember the slogan from the 70s? Black is beautiful? I believed it then, and I believe it still. Now, if you asked a lot of Americans, how would you feel about your 14-year-old daughter exposing her breasts in public? I don't imagine puberty rights would get a lot of public support. Few American fathers deal well with their inevitable, not entirely platonic attraction to their daughters, and few mothers want to hear the truth from the mirror, mirror on the wall when they ask, who's the most desirable little number in this household? Yes, there's a lot of mental ill health in this society, and it's not going to go away by just clicking your heels and reciting, there's no state like sanity, there's no state like sanity. But it's not just the parents' neuroses. It's the economic, quote, system, unquote. When will your daughter have her first period? Oh, 11, 12, maybe 13. When will she be ready to marry? Oh, maybe 25 when she gets out of law school, or 30 if she's pursuing a PhD in mathematics. When should she cast aside her virginity? Oh, ideally, never. But also ideally, I'll settle for her wedding night, say 15 years after she reaches puberty. Right. And with luck, when do you expect this event will happen? Oh, probably by the time she's 17, 5 years into puberty. Get it? We can't have puberty rights in the USA because Americans, reasonably enough, associate puberty with sex and babies. And Americans don't want their daughters to have sex, and really don't want their daughters to have babies, until they're married. And the unnatural economic system we have doesn't allow middle-class or working-class adulthood, and doesn't encourage marriage, until you get your first real job, which may be when you're 21 or 25 or 30, up to 20 years after you reach puberty. And when you reach puberty, what is your role in society? Consumer! Congratulations! You're now what our marketing department calls a tween. Check out our new line of tween cosmetics, tampons, and t-shirts. Not like those stuffy old cosmetics, tampons, and t-shirts your clueless old mother wears. Thanks for listening to this encore edition of New World Notes, first broadcast in September 2008. Find more at our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Illegitimi non carborundum. Everybody get together and try to love one another. Ciao.